Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here. And today we are going to be talking with Rob Moynihan, who's a reporter for TV Guide. And he just did a big feature in the magazine, which was a oral history of the creation of Survivor. And he talked to Jeff Probst and Mark Burnett and a bunch of casting people and then a bunch of different players. So we're going to talk to Rob about some of his findings for this article. But before we get to today's show, I want to thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And it's actually another TV show, and that is American Crime, which is coming to ABC, premiering next Thursday night, March 5th at 10 p.m. on ABC. American Crime is a show which follows the lives of a bunch of people in one community, which were all affected by a murder, and it takes a look at the events that happen from the vantage points of all the different lives that are affected by this case. The show spends time seeing things from the point of view of the victim, from the accused, from the investigators, all in one show every week. The show is created, and the executive producer is John Ridley, who was the Oscar-winning screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave, and it looks like it's going to be something that's really interesting if you like following all of these criminal cases. I know I got really into Serial over the past few months, and I think that this is going to be in a similar vein, but of course, this is a fictional series. Now, the show also is going to have its own podcast here on Podcast One. The show is going to be hosted by film critic and radio personality Elvis Mitchell, who will be hosting the American Crime podcast. He'll take an in-depth look at the groundbreaking new series, American Crime, after its premiere on Tuesday, March 5th at 10 p.m. on ABC. And each week on the podcast, Elvis is going to talk with John Ridley and different talent from the show about the latest episodes, character storylines, and other timely topics. Go to podcastone.com/American Crime to subscribe to the show and see more about the American Crime show and podcast. All right, everybody, I'm very excited today because we are going to dig deep in Survivor terms into something really cool that's being done around the Survivor 30 season anniversary. We are going to be speaking with Rob Moynihan, who is from TV Guide, who just finished writing a really great article about an oral history of Survivor, which is available on newsstands now. And also, we've got a link to the online version as well on robiswebsite.com. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Rob, the first thing that really jumps out about this article you did is the amazing, like, movie poster, which Jeff Probst looks like Indiana Jones. And yeah, it's sort of like a really, like, old school, like, 80s, like Empire Strikes Back type movie poster that they did.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. And I had no idea they were doing it when I was writing the story until I saw maybe a week before I got the first, you know, layout back from our design team. And this poster came out and my mouth hit the floor. It was really, really kind of amazing. I think our design and our art department did a fantastic job with this. They put these photos together from CBS, sent some episodic photos from classic seasons. You know, we've got some season one in there. We've got some Marquesas in there. We've got, you know, Jeff looking like Indiana Jones in there. And then we sent it over to, I believe it's a artist in the UK, and it took him a few weeks to put together, and that's the end result. It's phenomenal.
Really? I mean, you guys should sell this as a poster. Like, people would put this on their walls.
We're trying. I think there's like a photo rights issue with the photos that CBS first gave us, but we're trying to figure something out, and we may have an announcement soon. So,
all right, great. Well, we'll keep posted on that. All right, Rob, just tell me about this idea to do the oral history of Survivor. Is this something that you had been thinking about for a while?
Yeah, we wanted to do a big story about the 30th season, and we thought, you know, oral histories are kind of the thing now. If you look online and in magazines, everybody's doing an oral history, but I couldn't find an oral history about a reality television show, and especially about a reality television show as important as Survivor is to the grand landscape of television. So we started talking about it actually in July. So this has been, you know, about 6 months, a little over 6 months in the making. So we started throwing it around in July. I reached out to CBS to get their interest. They were very interested, and we just we kind of went from there.
I mean, the only problem is that it's how do you fit 15 years of oral history into one article? It was like, you know, I would love to hear more about the stuff definitely go ahead and read the article, but I'd love to hear more about like what you weren't able to fit into just one article.
Yeah, there was, if you read the article, you know, it turned out to be about 2,000 words and about 4 magazine pages long of text. So it's a lot, but there's also a lot more that we could put in there. And if you read the article, the first 2 pages are really about early years, development, and season 1, which as I was compiling all these interviews, I mean, I think that's one of the most interesting parts of the show because it really set the blueprint for what reality television is going to be, reality competition television is going to be in the future. So, I mean, I could have spent pages and pages on the early stuff, you know, everybody's audition stories from season 1. Season 1, I talked to Sue Hawk and I talked to Rich Hatch. And, of course, Mark Burnett and Jeff Probst have great anecdotes from season 1. But there were just a lot of, you know, audition stories, behind the scenes stuff, because people didn't know what they were doing at that time. The producers didn't know, CBS didn't know. They had no kind of guidelines about what to do. So I thought it was just fascinating that it was an experiment from day one from every department. Everybody didn't know what was going on. And of course we all know the end result, but it's kind of just fascinating. And then of course, you know, the secret keeping that went on through that first season and those press leaks that came out. I don't know if you remember the website when, you know, it was revealed that Jervis would be the winner because everybody else was X'd out besides right. Jervis's face. And it was just interesting to hear, you know, how difficult or not difficult it was to keep that secret from the players involved. So I could have gone on for pages and pages just about season 1.
Easily. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the interesting things that you touched on, I thought, in the article was talking about the casting of the show where they're talking about how, you know, nowadays, you know what a reality show is supposed to be. You know what people you want. You want, you know, the jock and this person and that person. And you have all these archetypes. But it was really interesting to hear them talking about how they didn't know what you were supposed to have on the first reality show.
Right, right. It was an open casting call. I think they went out to radio stations and did local advertising. I mean, I was talking to Sue, and she said she first heard about it in she was driving trucks in Milwaukee, and she first heard it with Milwaukee radio. So they had no idea who to look for. They just opened it up to everybody. I think they saw, you know, hundreds of people, the video submissions. They called them back for multiple interviews, and when they finally narrowed it down to the group, the core group that they brought to LA to meet with the CBS executives, the CBS executives didn't know what they were looking for, didn't know the people that they needed or wanted or would make for great television stranded on an island. So they would just ask them the most random questions ever to, you know, kind of play with how they would survive, kind of play with their morality, what decisions they would make out there. So it's kind of fascinating to hear that story, you know, 15 years later.
Rob, I was really glad that you were able to get in touch with Sue Hawk for this because she's somebody who's really, you never hear from her anymore ever associated with the show. Did you feel like in talking to her, she looks back fondly at her time with the show?
I think she does. I think she was one of my favorite interviews I did for this. You know, I requested a finite amount of time with everybody, but we went well over our limit just because of her willingness to talk about the show. And I think it really was a great trip down memory lane for her. And I think the memories are all positive. You know, the last time she was on there, she was on the All-Star Seasons, as you know, and there was an issue there. But she looks back, especially with season 1 and kind of how much the show has affected her life with great fondness.
Okay, good. Because I had recently watched all of season 1 over this past summer, and there's just like a lightness about her where she really seems to be enjoying herself. Obviously not right at the end, but you know, she was always a good sport most of the way through. And then, of course, with the experience with the All-Stars, I was interested to know if she was jaded or not. But happy to hear that she looks back finally. And how was Hatch in talking with him?
Hatch was good. You know, Hatch was
He's always good for the most part.
He was. He was very, very open to talk about, you know, all of his experiences, you know, on the island, the stuff afterwards. We really didn't delve too much into because I didn't want to kind of derail the story in that way. But
right.
As far as his experiences in season 1 and All Stars, he was great to talk to. And you know, you had to have Richard Hatch. I don't think I could have done this story without getting Richard Hatch because he is the ultimate survivor winner. He set the tone. He's the one who formed alliances. He knew the social game going into it, and he paved the way. So
now, How was Mark in terms of going back through all this? Because he's gone on to do so many other things and he always has so many other projects. Does he still talk about, you know, the first season of Survivor, sort of like they say, you know, it's like your first love, or, you know, the first time, you know, you have a child born? Does he still like have like the recall and the fondness about it?
He really does. And, you know, I love Mark Burnett. I've known him for years, and you can talk to Mark Burnett about all of his shows, you know, Apprentice, Voice, you know, all of his Bible shows now. But when you bring up Survivor, his eyes light up, because I think he understands how special Survivor is, not just for him personally, but for television. And it's always going to be his baby. It's always going to be something that he's going to make time for. I mean, I talked to him for the show on a day that he was promoting some of his new shows, you know, Dove Keepers and AD, and he wanted to sit down and talk about Survivor. So that to me, you know, shows that this guy really, you know, still with all the success that he's had, he really cares about the show. He really wants the show to succeed. And, you know, in talking with Mark and with Jeff, they really wanted to make the point come across that this is not the end of Survivor. In no way, yes, we're looking back and we're celebrating 15 years, 30 seasons, but in no way is this the end of Survivor going forward. There's still a lot more in the future, and they want to keep going for as long as the audience is there.
How hard is it to talk with Jeff about something like this? Because obviously he's somebody who's there, you know, for 30 seasons. Like, it's easy to say, okay, this is what I want to ask Sue Hawk, ask Richard Hatch. But for Jeff, you have this entire body of work. And for him, I'm sure it's such a blur because, you know, he never has any time away from the show like so many right. other people do. So how do you approach going through all this talking with Jeff?
So actually, the interview with Jeff was the first one I did. We sat down at his house right around Halloween time and really just spent an afternoon going through the history of Survivor, which to me was probably one of the best afternoons of my career. It was really quite fantastic. So we sat down and we really hit, you know, different seasons. We spent a lot on the early years, season one. We hit different contestants that he wanted to talk about. I really kind of let Jeff guide it in the way that, you know, because he's the expert. Like you said, he's been out there. He doesn't really have time away from it at all. He's been there every single year. So he kind of guided the way that the story ultimately turned out based on, you know, who we wanted to talk about, the big moments that stood out for him. So it was great. He was great. And his memory is super sharp. You know, we could talk about just the first days of, I think what made it in the story is that, you know, when he first heard about the show, he was on the 405 listening to the radio and called up his agent and said, I need to talk to Mark Burnett. I mean, he remembered details with his conversations with Mark very early on that were very impressive. So it was great. It was really fun to talk to him.
All right. You also talked to a lot of the different cast members from beyond the seasons of season one. So who are the other people that you talked to do the oral history?
Yeah, we tried to hit kind of the Survivor's greatest hits, as you will. So we did Richard Hatch and Sue Hawk for season one. We did a whole section on villains. So I wanted to talk to Jerry Manthe because she was kind of the first villain from Australia. We got Johnny Fairplay in there giving us some behind the scenes stuff about the lie. We've got, of course, Russell Hantz is in there. And then we wanted to hit some of the arguably the greatest players of all time. So we've got Boston Rob. We've got Parvati. We've got Sandra, two-time winner. We couldn't not include Sandra in there. And then wanted to talk to some players who are also super fans. So we've got Cochran in there as well to give us some nice color on just kind of some past moments. So I think it really turned out. It's so well-rounded. You know, it's so hard. I think there are 450-something contestants that have been on this show. So narrowing it down to a 10 to 12 number was very, very difficult. But I think we hit the people and we hit the beats that we wanted to hit.
Going through the article, who did you feel like had a higher opinion of themselves and their game? Was it Johnny Fairplay or Russell?
Oh, that's a very good question, because I would have said one of the two of them. I mean, I have to say, with Fairplay, it was very interesting talking to him because he just has no apologies about the way that he played the game, and he has no excuses about how he wanted to be perceived. He told me in the first minute we talked, he's like, I wanted to be the biggest villain ever, and I was the biggest villain ever. And I couldn't argue with him. And when I tried to bring up, you know, well, what about Russell? What if you see somebody? He's, oh no, they're a fake. They're a phony. That's not, it's not, you know, it did get into some kind of weird social politics between the former contestants and how they view each other. I didn't touch too much in the article because it just got to be kind of a little back and forth name calling. But Johnny Fairplay was very interesting. Russell was very interesting. Russell was great. You know, I think Russell has changed just based on the, you know, brief conversations that we've had. But he's even admitted that, you know, some of the gameplay that we saw in his three seasons, he's kind of questioning now. And, you know, I asked him, would you ever come back and play? And he said it would be a really difficult decision for him to do that. And he thinks he would play a completely different game. Now, I don't know if we can believe him with that. But it did sound like, you know, I covered Russell seasons, so I've talked to him for years as well. This was a different Russell. It sounded like he was kind of getting his life together and looking back in that, you know, he recognizes the impact he had on the show and the way that he played the game. And he's not apologetic for that at all. But I think going forward, if he was ever to play the game again, it would be different.
See, I'm not sure how much people are able to play the game differently. Like, I do feel like a big part of Survivor is that it really brings out who you are. And in some sense, like, I think that Survivor is the truest you that you could possibly be, because it shows you, you know, when you are stripped away of everything, you know, what you do under these dire circumstances.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that too, because in talking to Jeri Manthe, she was really the only one who talked about getting a bad edit. When I talked about bad edits for the rest of the contestants, they said, no, that was kind of me. That's really how you are when you're out there. And she was the only one who I wouldn't say complained about a bad edit, but brought up the fact that she had maybe an edit that didn't portray her the way that she thought she should be portrayed. She thought she was more kind of a hero in that season, which was very interesting. So I agree with you that Survivor kind of brings out that character, though.
Yeah, and I think that also speaks to the time in which the show was on. In 2001, you know, some of the things that Jeri did was sort of like, you know, giving like, you know, the stink eye to people or complaining about the food and stuff like that, compared to like what we would think of a villain on today's reality TV. And we have people like, you know, all sorts of like, you know, bullying and name calling and destruction of personal property and stuff like that. So to be a villain in 2001, especially as a woman, you didn't have to do too much wrong.
Right, right. It's very interesting I talked to Richard Hatch about this as well, because, you know, he was very much perceived as a villain back then. But now when you look at him, you say he's the mastermind that started this whole, you know, social revolution with this game. And I think Survivor has changed so much over the years in gameplay. It's just fascinating. I think Heroes and Villains was a perfect example to see these old people, or not old people, but old contestants come back and play the game. And the game had changed so much socially. That's why I really think it would be interesting to see somebody like Richard Hatch come back and play again now. Because, I mean, All-Stars was a long time ago, and a lot has changed since All-Stars. So I would love to see how he could do with some of today's winners and some of today's, quote, best players.
Yeah, I think that would be a lot of fun. How was Boston Rob when you talked to him?
Boston Rob was great, and I have to thank him so much for talking to me, because it was, you know, I was arranging these interviews in a hectic time during the holidays, and, you know, he's got kids and a family, so it took a while to make it work, but he was really great. He's another one who looks back on Survivor with a lot of fondness, and another one that, you know, he said he wouldn't play the game anymore. You know, he's done what he's needed to do. It took him four times to do it, but he's done it. I think Survivor for him, it means so much personally, of course, because he met Amber and he started his family, and it really kind of transcends a game for him. It really kind of made his life into what it is now. And it's interesting, and I don't know if you have opinions about this as well, but all of the people that I talked to who were in the All-Stars season said it was one of the kind of a darker season, mm-hmm. when it comes to relationships among people. And Rob was the only one who said, no, you know, I love that season, and he found his wife. But I think I think a lot of people, that season still leaves a bad taste in their mouth because of kind of what happened to the relationships that were formed before the game and then versus what they turned into after the game.
Yeah, that was a kind of a dark season in terms of the show, because one, everybody came into it with such high expectations and there was, right, so much hype, and it was going to be, you know, all these people were coming back from the first couple seasons and it was going to be on after the Super Bowl. And then ultimately, the way that it played out, with so many people having sort of like these hurt feelings around the show, it really was a different sort of feeling where normally on Survivor, you know, you go out there and then you have hurt feelings and then you have the reunion show. And for the most part, everybody has sort of like patched things up. But I think that's really the first time that you have a season where people are still, you know, annoyed and upset with each other when you go to the reunion. And even, you know, 12 years later, I feel like there's still people with hard feelings towards one another from what happened out there in that season.
Oh, absolutely. Those wounds are very fresh in talking to the people that I talked to. Everybody really, except for Rob, as I said, he was the one who looked back at the season. He said it was a great season for him. Look at the outcome. So,
yeah, for him, I think I feel like, you know, and he was somebody who really didn't have, you know, his feelings hurt by anything in that season. So, he doesn't really have reason to be mad about anything that happened in that season. He's probably the only one. But
yeah, and it's also interesting too, because he would talk, I'd ask him about the Redemption Island season, and as we all know, Redemption Island is a very polarizing twist among fans. And for Rob, you know, he'll say, I love the twist because it helped me win the game, and it really did. It was a twist that was kind of built in there for both Russell and Rob to advance further, and I think that season, and he was kind of willing to admit that season, the way it was structured, was there to kind of help him win the game.
Now, did talking to all these different players and to you know, Jeff and Mark, did anything, any like ideas that you had about the show, did anything change after doing all this?
You know, I think none of my opinions about the show changed, but I think just the way that, you know, there's so much that goes into this show that we don't even think about when we see it. And when Jeff was talking about, you know, how they built the crew, their crew was, you know, 80 something people in season one. They went up to 200 something people in Australia. And a lot of that crew has been with them, and how much it takes to put the challenges together and how much it takes to kind of build two seasons of television in one location. It's a year round process. And I think, you know, just the drive and the passion that goes into it, especially on Mark and Jeff's side, is something that I think a lot of fans might take for granted, but I think that Survivor kind of wouldn't be where it is today without those driving forces of Mark and Jeff. And you got to commend them for that.
What about some things that maybe the average fan might be surprised to know that you found out after talking with everybody?
Let me think. I would hope to think that a lot of the season one stuff would be stuff that the average fan wouldn't know about. A lot of the early casting things, the Johnny Fairplay kind of behind the scenes with the lie, I think is a very interesting story. You know, Mark was on a satellite phone. Mark was there on location, and he was on a satellite phone as the challenge was playing out. Because as you know, the lie happened before the loved ones challenge was happening. So Mark was on the phone trying to see if they could arrange even to get Fairplay off the island to go back for the funeral. And he called, and the grandma answered the phone. And so Mark then knew that they were all hoodwinked. So there's just a lot of, you know, little behind the scenes tidbits that, as a fan, I think it's fun to go back and watch that now. I love that, you know, CBS has them all available on that all access streaming platform now. Yeah. So I've been going back and kind of rewatching little things, now knowing the stories behind the scenes. So it's been fun.
And now with all of the hoopla surrounding Survivor 30, between the stuff that you've done and some of the stuff that CBS is doing. And of course, we all got together at the Paley Center for the event that they had to commemorate the 30 seasons. Were you surprised that season 30 wasn't an all-star season?
I was very surprised season 30 wasn't an all-star season. I mean, I was surprised that season 25 wasn't an all-star season. I don't quite understand why they're not doing the all-star season again, because I've asked Jeff and I've asked Mark, and they say, you know, they want new blood, they want to keep it fresh, but I think there's something about all-star seasons, especially centered around big reunions, that, like, look at how well Heroes versus Villains worked. I think that's one of, if not the best season the show has ever done. And I think if you bring back the right people, it would be so interesting to see them play again. You know, I asked the people that I talked to that were winners, I asked if they'd be willing to come back, and especially willing to come back for an all-winners season. And all of them were game for it. So I think the willingness is there for the contestants, but I just don't know why, you know, Jeff and Mark and CBS are kind of reluctant to do that. But Yeah, season 30, I've been hearing really good things. I'm supposed to take a look at it later this week. So my fingers are crossed and I'm optimistic.
Yeah. With the All-Star seasons, it's kind of hit or miss. Like, I feel like, just like we were talking about with the All-Stars, it's like, you know, it's definitely a bump, but I feel like that first season after they do the All-Star seasons, it's hard to, you know, get the thing back up and going again for the fans. Like, traditionally, those have been in disappointing seasons following the All-Star season. So
that's a really great point. That's a really great point. You go back and you look at, because I think Nicaragua was right after Heroes versus Villains, and that's arguably the worst. So, I think that the show, it has momentum. They're doing little tweaks with the format now, but I would love to have them go back and visit an All-Star. I think it'll happen. I don't think that we'll never have another All-Star Survivor season. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, I think Survivor, the production, is looking at the All-Star season. It's like they've got the hidden immunity idol in their back pocket. It's like, well, I'm going to play it when we need it. We're safe right now. The show's doing fine. Jeff's life is fine. Everything is good. And then, if the ratings go down, I feel like then they're like, all right, I'm going to play the hidden immunity All-Star season tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also the question of, if and when the show ever gets to the end, how do you end it? Do you end it with that All-Star season? Do you end it with all winners? I don't know. And as I mentioned before, Jeff and Mark are very reluctant to talk about the word end when it comes to Survivor. So,
yeah. Well, I do think that that's something that's very interesting about the show, where I feel like if you go back throughout the history, and I don't know if this is something that you stumbled upon in talking with people, was that the ending of Survivor always seems like it's like a year away. And it's like, you're doing, Survivor 4, and it's like, well, how many more of these are they going to do? And now we're at Survivor 30, and it seems like, okay, well, they'll do 31 and 32, and then I guess we'll see what's there. But you wouldn't be surprised if you get to Survivor 40, and it's like, well, let's see if we do 41 and 42.
Right, and really, though, at this point in time, I think that the show is kind of settled in a space that it's in the least danger it's ever been in to be canceled. I really think...
That's when you get blindsided, Rob. Haven't you learned anything talking to these people?
But you go back and you look at those years in the middle where, Jeff was renegotiating his contract, then Jeff had, the Jeff Probst show, and you weren't quite sure where it was going to go. CBS, has been renewing it two cycles at a time because they can recycle that same location and they can film it back to back. So it's definitely saving money. You look at the numbers, you mentioned the ratings comparatively are doing great for a show that's been in its 30th season, 15 years. So I think at this point in time, knock on wood, but I would say that it's kind of safe for now.
Okay. Well, Rob, the oral history is a great idea. Will you ever expand on it? Is it something that you've ever thought about maybe going to a book with this?
It is something I've thought about. It's something I'm having some conversations with now. So there might be. It might be. Never say never. Right now, the oral history is available in the magazine. It's available online, and I'll be posting some more outtakes from it, from my conversations with Jeff and some other people as we lead up to the premiere.
Right, and I told you the other night, if you ever go to the book and then ultimately to the audio book and you need somebody to do all the voices, you let me know.
You're it. You're the guy.
All right. Follow Rob Moynihan on Twitter. Besides the Survivor beat, what else can we expect from you on TV Guide?
Oh, I do. I cover The Walking Dead, so we're right in the middle of Walking Dead Season 5B right now. I've got, postmortems going up after every episode on Sunday, so keep an eye out for that. Do a lot of comedies, Big Bang, New Girl, Mindy Project, and in reality, Survivor, Race, Idol, Voice, they keep me busy over there, so it's a little bit of everything.
Okay. Follow Rob Moynihan on Twitter. He's at Rob Moynihan. I'm going to post the link to the TV Guide article on robiswebsite.com. And thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Rob.
Bye.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Rob Moynihan here on Survivor Premiere Week. We've got a lot of stuff coming up. We're going to crown Mr. and Miss Survivor on Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, live. And then, of course, we are getting into our Survivor 30 coverage coming up, and that is going to be with myself and Stephen Fishback live at 9:45 for another season of Survivor Know-It-Alls. Plus, I'll talk to the first person kicked off of Survivor on Thursday. We'll do our big Survivor podcast. I'll talk about the amazing race on Friday night as well with Jessica Lease. And Jessica will have an audio podcast for you guys covering the premiere of The Amazing Race on Wednesday night. So a lot of stuff here to do on Rob is a Podcast. Hope you're locked in. Subscribe to the podcast, robisawebsite.com/iTunes, or get the Rob Has a Podcast app. Go to robisawebsite.com/app. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you again very, very soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.